Squens, and this is Nintendo World Report's Connectivity Podcast, episode 137, Zack Off. We've got two segments for you this week. First up, myself, Neil, and Johnny reminisce about E3 2004, and after that, the two Zacks talk about game collecting. Enjoy the episode.
Welcome to a special edition of Connectivity where we're going to talk about E3 2004. And I'm Neil Ronahan, and I wasn't at E3 2004. I was about 16 paying attention to this at my after-school job when I was in high school. But Jonathan Metz and Mike Sklens from RFN and Connectivity, respectively, were both there and present.
I thought you were going to say from Box Office Poison.
Yeah, from CrossCon. Straight off the plane from CrossCon.
Not quite.
I guess before we dive into Nintendo's E3 2004, what do you guys remember about E3 2004 just kind of as a whole?
Ooh.
This was my third E3. So I was in college at the time, and I remember feeling very cool that we got to cut like the fucking gigantic line into the little 3D into the DS sub booth.
Yeah,
we got to cut the line.
Yeah, you did.
Because of our good friends at Golan Harris, Nintendo's then longtime PR firm. We had good relationships with them, so they like there was like you know like those lines where they're like, "Here's the booth," and then here's like the smaller part of the booth that has the one thing you really want to see.
Yeah,
that this was like I think one of the first one of those.
Yeah, because the 3DS had an almost identical booth,
and the Wii had the same thing where they had it like behind the curtain, like you had to wait in a longer line to get to the Wii section. And DS, I think the DS was the very first time any publisher had done that kind of thing, and people were like, "Oh my god, you have to wait in this giant line just to fucking see it."
It was really weird.
We created this real mystery around it.
Oh yeah. It was huge. It was an incredible feat. It looks like you can imagine. It looks kind of ridiculous in this giant exhibition hall for their big open booth to have this like shrouded off. Mysterious, like literally a black curtain, you know, and it just has the big Nintendo DS logo. And everyone who walks by that says, "Oh my God, what's in there?" And they're not showing video. They're showing like maybe pictures of it on the video outside, but you don't really get a sense of what it is. And so this was the first year I can remember at E3 Nintendo having completely ridiculous lines in their booth, like lines that people would stand in for half the day. Can you imagine spending half a day standing in line at E3? Like, this isn't PAX, you know? You're supposed to be doing things. You're supposed to be productive at E3. You're supposed to be seeing everything you possibly can because it's just this spastic circus of video games all around you, and you can never see all of them. And to me, it's amazing that someone could go to E3 and just stand in one place for half a day to see something like that.
At least you'd have your DS with you.
Yeah, right. Or your 3DS. Yeah.
Well, I guess the GBA was out this year, which I'm sure you guys noticed from watching the press conference video. It immediately struck me as weird right off the bat that they were showing GBA games. I was like, oh, wow, this is – like this feels antiquated in a way.
Yeah, it was basically the last E3 with a big GBA push, although I guess Game Boy Advance Micro would have been 2005.
Yeah, but they didn't really show any new games with that.
I don't – were there
like
really
one or
any
two,
new games?
But not like
Fire Emblem, I think, maybe.
Yeah, it might have been Sacred Stones, because I think the first Game Boy Advance Fire Emblem game was 03.
Yeah, and they had some of the Final Fantasy ports, but not a full lineup like they had back in 04.
Yeah, so Johnny, this was your fifth E3?
This was my fifth E3, my second as director of Planet GameCube. And, I kind of groaned a little bit when you said, what are your memories overall of this E3? Because it's... I can always remember specific things that happened every year, but my overall feeling of E3 is so smeared across 14 years of going at this point that it's really hard for me to isolate like my emotional condition at the end of the show for that one. You know, like they're all very similar when you add them up because so much of E3 is the same every year. People don't maybe get that, but the experience is actually very, very regular for me. It's a yearly ritual I've been doing for half my life. So going to E3 is like a lot of it is almost automatic, you know? And the things that I remember the most are the specifics. It's the cool, you know, the new console announcement or the really weird interview that I got to do and things like that, that I get kind of excited about. But like an overall feeling, I don't think I could distinguish it from, I certainly couldn't have before I started doing all the research to remind myself, you know, like it didn't stick out that much. I remember it generally being a good year. Like it's almost like the Star Wars or the Star Trek sequels, you know. It's like it feels like every other E3. There was a long stretch in like the mid 2000s where it was kind of every other year was really good and every other year was really bad.
Yeah,
yeah. Because we talked about 2003 last year. I think, Mike, that was just me and you on a connectivity episode.
Yeah, that was my second E3, and it was sandwiched between what I think were probably the two best E3s that I went to.
So, yeah, 02
was my first E3, and it was the year that they had Mario Sunshine, Wind Animal Waker, Crossing, and Metroid Prime all at the same show.
And that was when Animal Crossing was introduced, and there was
whatever.
I could give a
shit about anything other than the fact that those three games were all there, and I got to play them. And it was the most insane thing, basically ever. I still think it's the best E3, but a lot of that is probably colored by the fact that it was also my first and it set the bar really high.
I would say 2002 is probably my favorite overall. But it's kind of like ranking Mega Mans because they're all similar to each other that like there's little bitty differences sometimes. Because E3 is so much of it I feel sort of neutral towards. Like there are aspects that I love, there are aspects that I hate. But there's a giant chunk of it that is, like I said, it's really almost like a routine for me. It's like something I have to do every year. It's a it's a rite of passage for the summer.
You're like a swallow going back to Capistrano.
It's like a road. It's like driving across the country. It's not enjoyable in and of itself, but there's this feeling of grandeur and, you know, there's something memorable about doing it, even though you didn't really do anything the whole time. I don't know.
Yeah, well, let's go into what Nintendo coming into E3 2004. They were not really doing that well because E3 2003, as we were kind of talking about, wasn't that strong. That was the Pac-Man versus year for people who don't remember. Yeah. That was kind of weak, and this is when Xbox kind of surged ahead and kind of took second place, and PlayStation 2 was kicking ass. And the opening video for Nintendo's press conference was basically built around the idea that we make games worth playing. That was kind of like the crux of the opening video, showing off stuff like Metroid Prime 2, Star Fox Assault, Resident Evil 4, and a whole other laundry list of games. And then to start off the press conference, the person who comes out is not anyone that we've seen before. It's Reggie Fils-Aimé, who I guess this is his 10th E3. Because he comes out, I think he was just, I forget his exact title at the time. It was like marketing director or something.
Yeah, I believe he was the new vice president of marketing.
Vice president of marketing, that sounds right.
They had shifted some people around at that time. I believe George Harrison was the previous VP of marketing, and he was promoted to executive vice president, I believe, which I think at the time he was the highest ranking non-Japanese member of Nintendo.
I looked it up. Reggie was VP of sales and marketing, and George Harrison was Nintendo's senior vice president of marketing and corporate communications.
Ah, okay.
Time differences.
Very similar.
Reggie, he was a VP, and I think he came from Pizza Hut, right?
He
came from VH1.
He was the mastermind of the Bigfoot Pizza.
Oh, wow.
And had sold, I think he had worked for Guinness, one of the beer companies, and had done marketing for beer.
I remember him working for VH1 and giving them a big push into the MTV market. Like he kind of brought them into that pop culture world.
Yeah, I remember when I was a kid in the 80s, VH1 felt like it was for older people. It was like VH1 for people 10 years older than us.
Yeah.
And Reggie, he
hipped it up like a lot.
A bunch of weird stuff. So anyway.
But he came on the stage and he said the almost immortal quote, mm-hmm. "My name is Reggie. I'm about kicking ass. I'm about taking names, and we're about making games."
Yeah.
And then that and
it's awkward even as he says it.
It's so awkward.
Immediately awkward and hilarious. Not like it, like on the one hand, it was the coolest thing anyone from Nintendo had ever said out loud.
On the other hand,
it was like, dude, this isn't exactly like rated R. edgy material here.
Yeah. You know? And all of the executives come out to like fucking blasting hip hop in this press conference.
It's pretty wonderful.
I think this, that's kind of like a normal thing now, or I guess they all come out to like pop music, like big pop music. It just was hip hop at the time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's, but this was like really kind of almost the beginning of that. Like 2 years ago, I was in a hotel conference hall at the Biltmore and it's this really small thing. And here we are in 2004 and it's like this massive, massive, massive convention hall they're in just for their press conference.
They were in the, where were they this year? Was it the Kodak?
They were, no, they were in the convention space above the Kodak Theater. Like, so
okay.
It's huge. It's almost, it's a, it must hold at least as many people as the Kodak. It's just way cheaper to rent.
Yeah, it's massive.
So then the press conference started off with stuff like Metroid Prime 2 Echoes, Star Fox Assault, a Resident Evil 4 trailer, and then Reggie talking about how they're trying to make games for the game experts, but understand if they play games on other systems, and they're about satisfying all the gamers, and making a lot of jokes and stabs at Microsoft.
Yeah, do you understand what the context is for all that?
Maybe not off the top of my head.
So in 2004, going into E3 2004, especially out of 2003, there was a lot of talk of Nintendo starting to do a lot of stuff that was geared towards younger people.
This was like the kiddie years, right?
Yeah, you know, it's when I remember actually. God, this takes me back, guys. I remember on AOL Instant Messenger chatting with Max Lake.
Oh wow,
this would have been around 2002, 2003, and Max had a lot of sources. This is back when we actually had sources because a lot of these companies were a lot looser back then.
Hey, I have a few sources.
I'm sure you do.
Everything's a lot more controlled now, though.
Yeah, it definitely is. but we had a lot of sources within Nintendo of America. They weren't nearly as tight as they are now. And sometimes you would just hear things from people who were on official duty, but they would just kind of share something with you kind of off the hand and say, you know, you can't publish this, but you know, like I can show you something. And that just doesn't exist anymore, I don't think. But back then it did happen. And we would just hear things. And I remember Max Lake, this was probably like 2 a.m, we're writing stuff, we're editing, you know, and we're chatting online and Max says, "Hey, I heard this weird rumor about a game Nintendo's making." And like, you know, people do this crap all the time. They fool their friends or whatever. But with Max, like, this was a real tip. Like, he actually knew something. And I might be the first person he's told. And Max had learned that Nintendo might be making a game for babies. And I thought, what are you talking about? And he said, like, a game for two-year-olds. And I was like, what? It blew my mind. I was like, how... Who would even – it can't be made up because who would even be crazy enough to make that shit up? And it turned out to be Pokemon TV. Is that where the Pokemon Channel?
Pokemon Channel.
That's what it was because they were showing this thing where, you know, Meowth was like singing on a stage and he's out on the catwalk and everybody's taking photos. And the
Pokemon
idea was
Channel
that
is a
you're
real
not really,
trip.
Well, the idea was that you're not really playing it so much as you're just kind of directing it. Like you push buttons and flip channels. You can manipulate little pieces of it, but it's not really a full interactive experience that you have to understand. The controls are like basically one button. And that's what it was.
That is a game for babies. That game makes so much more sense.
That's
now.
Not a crack at it. That is literally how the game was pitched internally at Nintendo. Let's make a Pokemon game that the 7-year-olds playing it on GBA can sort of enjoy alongside their toddler siblings.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah,
because
all Pokemon Channel is just basically you're channel surfing two different Pokemon related things.
Yeah.
But yeah, that game does make a hell of a lot more sense.
That would be like, so I can't, that should be on an iPad right now.
So the context of this kind of thing happening, you know, Zelda Wind Waker coming out and it came out to very good reception. But that game looks like a cartoon, you know, and that at the time was kind of a slam against it. So there was a lot of feeling that Nintendo was too kiddie. Really people were actually using the word kiddie a lot.
Yeah, no, I remember.
It's a purple lunchbox, you know.
Yeah, exactly. The GameCube didn't look cool. Their system had already been dropped down to $100, which on the one hand was amazing because it was super easy for people to get this awesome system.
Yeah.
On the other hand, made it look like cheap garbage compared to something like a $300 Xbox at the time. So,
even though it's just as powerful.
Yeah, exactly. Roughly. And it was, and they were for the first time feeling squeezed in a three-way market that had not existed 3 years earlier.
Yeah.
So they're now competing not only with Sony, who they'd already been struggling against mightily for the past, you know, 7 or 8 years.
Almost a decade.
Yeah. But now they've got Microsoft, and Microsoft, although not at that point had not sold as many Xboxes as GameCubes, they were very close. And that's from nothing. That's from people laughing when you mentioned that Microsoft might make a video game system 3 years.
And they launched basically, they launched like 2 or 3 days apart from each other.
Yeah. Three years later, they're competing with Nintendo, the king of video game consoles. So Nintendo's feeling a lot of pressure, and that really informs the whole tone of this press conference and of their sort of attitude at this E3, which is that, look, we're in charge here. We run this game. We are video games. We don't take orders from anyone. We're doing way better than you think. We're making games for hardcore players who love what we do and understand really complex mature games. And I mean, the video reels, the cutscenes, the clips that they shot from Zelda all prove this, you know, like Nintendo was like really, really, I mean, the first game that they show once Reggie comes out is Metroid Prime 2, which is probably one of the most difficult and complex games on ever released on GameCube. And that was their marquee title, you know. This is pre-Wii Nintendo. This is back when they're like, we're as hardcore as it gets, and we're going to prove it to you. And that they felt threatened, like their reputation among
they had
video,
a marketing like, problem. Like if they actually, yeah. Harrison right. goes through all the stats and they're like, we're outpacing the market. GBA sells more units than the fucking PS2. Everything is fine. We have shitloads of money. Why do y'all hate us? Like
because they were becoming uncool. Do you understand? Yeah. So they're actually performing great. They're doing really, really, really well, especially in a new three-way market that they've never had to deal with before. And GBA is doing so well that they have to kill it off and move on to the next thing as soon as possible. And they're doing amazingly well, and no one's giving them any credit for it because they're immediately uncool. Microsoft and Sony, too, have made them incredibly uncool. And this press conference is Nintendo saying, no, that's not it. We are the coolest. And they oversell it. Like they try too hard really to show how awesome and cool and edgy and dark and mature and hip and teen and 20s and 30s that they are. But geez, God bless them for trying. I mean, I wish that they had this much attitude now as they did.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like now, like they made this push back in, you know, 2004, 2005, and they were already developing the Wii, which the Blue Ocean strategy and was made for everyone as opposed to focusing on game experts, as Reggie called it. And now at this point, they're really not competing for the most part with Microsoft and Sony. They're kind of like almost competing for another market, competing for another audience. Well, yeah, not entirely.
Yeah. I don't want to jump ahead, but I am going to, I guess, jump pretty far ahead into the press conference when Iwata shows up, because he talks about how DS is going to change things and they need to shake things up. And then he mentions that, you know, graphics are kind of getting to a point of diminishing returns and our next console is not going to focus on horsepower. We are going to do something completely different. Yeah. And you can already see them moving into it with the DS itself. But like, we'll get into more of that later.
Yeah. And I mean, there's another quote from Reggie in this early part where he's making all these jokes and stabs at Sony and Microsoft, where he said, he with the best games wins. Always been that way. Always will. Which I think is kind of tragic, because if you look at the Wii U right now, the Wii U has a lot of really good games, and it ain't selling shit.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully Mario Kart will actually turn it around. But, you know, we just got that 1.2 million copies in a weekend, which is insane given the install base.
That's really good. That's what? That's like a fifth of the entire user base.
Yeah, but also, I mean, the user base being what it is, you know, most of those people are going to buy a card at some point. So
yeah,
I wonder. I'm extremely curious to find out, but
see if it has legs. But
good on them.
Yeah.
I feel like there's an energy to Nintendo's presence at E3 in 2004. They feel threatened. Obviously, this is where the whole myth of I like Nintendo when they're down and they have to get really desperate and creative. This is where it comes from. You know, it was this year. This is what people are remembering and sort of absorbing into their mythology of Nintendo as a corporate entity and the way they behave in different situations. And I would love, I mean, this got me so excited watching this you know, we're a week out from E3. We're literally a week to the day before Nintendo's digital event where they're going to announce all the new stuff that's coming out this year. And I would be over the moon if it was as exciting as the presentation in 2004.
Yeah. I mean, I remember, at least as far as where I was at during this press conference, I was probably in school when this happened. But I do remember during like a computer class trying to get on the computer and circumvent whatever filters I could to see what was announced. And I remember I worked at the library next to my high school and showing my boss the Twilight Princess trailer, being like, look at how cool this is. And she was like, get back to work. it was a palpable excitement that, you know, even carried to people who weren't in the, you know, in the convention center.
I mean, it was there in that hall. You can hear it if you rewatch the video. The crowd is electric. They're freaking out over certain stuff.
Yeah. So then the next part of the press conference has George Harrison come out talking sales, and Johnny kind of touched on that by saying how, you know, they're trending up. Things aren't looking that bad. We swear.
Well, yeah. At this point, they're already adopting the marketing strategy of becoming a loss leader. They've dropped the price of the console to $100.
Yeah.
Their plan is to move units into the hands of the non-hardcore base by selling at this value price, and then hoping that those users, those new users, will, while they may enjoy some of the new software, they'll mostly be feeding off the back catalog, which has all been player's choice down to like $20 or $30 bucks or whatever. So they're kind of already reaching out to this casual market to kind of try and shore up their revenues.
Yeah, and some of the games that then Harrison showed around this time was Donkey Kong Jungle Beat. I don't know if that was our first look at this or not, but it was definitely probably the first playable look at it.
I remember hearing rumors of that.
We actually didn't know what it was.
Yeah, all we knew was there was some crazy game from the new studio in Tokyo.
Yep.
That's all we knew.
How funny that is, how this is, that's how EA
and they do Mario now.
Yeah.
No, let me put it to you this way, Neil. We had, the day before this Nintendo press conference, we had scooped out the convention center. This is real inside baseball, by the way.
And all, back in the day when you could actually do that.
Exactly. Yeah, you can't do that anymore.
We snuck up into Nintendo's they have meeting space above the convention hall floor, and we had snuck up into Nintendo's meeting space to look out the windows over their booth.
Yeah. Because you could see over all the curtains that they had drawn up around the booth to prevent people from seeing it. From
up above, yeah, you just went up above, you could see it all.
Yeah, that's where we got a picture of the Nintendo DS logo before Nintendo had actually announced the name of the system. Although they said it was not a final name at the time.
Yeah, yeah, that's so weird to hear now.
Yeah, right.
That the DS will launch under a new name when it comes out later this year.
Wild.
But yeah, we
imagine what that would have meant for 3DS and 2DS and.
Like, I can't even comprehend, like, what that DSi name could have been. I mean, unless they were going to go, like, you know, Game Boy DS or something like that.
But this is back when you could scoop that kind of stuff. You know, you can't do that now. Everything's really super controlled now.
Yeah.
We walked upstairs, we found an unlocked door.
Projections on walls.
Well, I was just going to say, Neil, that we had seen in our spying, which was, I think, actually on the E3 schedule that year, is that the day before the press conference, we were going to try to go and spy on the booth.
Yeah,
I think we had actually scheduled out a time for that. But we went there, and it was a treasure trove. We saw all kinds of crazy shit that we weren't supposed to. And I saw the logo for Donkey Kong Jungle Beat. And we had no idea what that was. I mean, this is Nintendo Tokyo. I think there had been a press release that they had started an EAD Tokyo studio the year before, but we had absolutely no idea what they were doing. And we didn't know that this was it when we saw the Donkey Kong logo.
Yeah.
But I just remember thinking, you know, at first everyone was like, that must be the new name for Donkey Konga. They're going to bring that over in America. And some people were like, no way, they're not going to bring over that thing with a drum controller.
No, and they did.
It must be a new Donkey Kong game. And I saw it, and I thought, there was something about the artwork. And I said, I don't think that's Donkey Konga. I think that might be a new game. And yet, it has Beat in the title. And that made me wonder, what if there's another Donkey Kong game that you play with the drums? And I basically sussed out what this game is. Based on that logo and what very little we could see. And then the next day they actually showed it in the video, and I was basically right. I was surprised to see that they were also bringing Donkey Konga, because that was like the way more Japanese weirdo game that I didn't really think they would bring over. But they did.
And so also Pikmin 2, Advance Wars Under Fire, which would later be known as Battalion Wars. That was the GameCube Advance Wars. And then Paper Mario 2 were some of the other games that were shown during this. Anything that you guys remember about those games?
I remember one that you didn't mention, but I'm pretty sure Odama was at E3 this year.
I think Odama, Odama was there for a couple of years in various forms.
Yeah, Odama was also there.
Yes, this was the first year it showed up.
Goddamn weird.
And this was the year you could control it with the bongos, I think, right?
It was the year of the bongos. There were three fucking bongo games in Nintendo's booth that year.
What a world.
And then, but that game ended up being a microphone game in the end, which is even somehow weirder.
It was always a microphone game.
Yeah,
that's right. It was a microphone and bongo game in 2004.
Yeah, with Odama, for anybody that knows of the Nintendo World Store in New York City, I think there was a time period from like 2006 to 2009 where there was just this one copy of Odama that was there. By itself, no one bought it. It was there for, I'm not joking, probably 2 or 3 years.
I would have bought it. How much? But they were probably overcharging for it.
Well, no, it was at, I think it was at like 50 fucking bucks for the entire time it was there. But I just remember every time I go there, the copy of Adama is still there.
Yeah, they don't really do sales at that store.
Yeah. Yeah, they only, if the price gets cut down, they'll drop it, but they don't really do sales. But it was just, then one day it disappeared. I don't know if someone bought it or if they're just like, let's just throw this out. There's no
Put it in the museum.
Yeah.
The weird thing is, I've been
next to the Gulf War Game Boy.
I've been in the Redmond, Washington Nintendo headquarters employee store that was part of their headquarters, and that was a trip. That was like really mind blowing at the time, looking around at all that crazy merchandise and the
because that's most of the stuff that's in the World Store as well.
Exactly. When I went several years later, when I went to the Nintendo World Store in New York, I was like, "Oh, this looks like the employee store, except the prices are way higher."
Yeah, because that's what I actually, because when I was out for the Photo Dojo thing, I got to go to the Nintendo employee store, and I just looked around, I'm like, this is basically everything that's at Nintendo World Store, and I could actually, because I won a gift card by, you know, beating Bill Trinan in Photo Dojo. I won a gift card by doing that, and I could actually use it at either one, so I wound up saving it and then using it at the New York one.
That's awesome.
But yeah, Paper Mario 2, was that playable on the show floor?
You know, I think that it might have been. I want to say there was a boss battle in which you were fighting a giant dinosaur or a...
That sounds like something that was in that
game.
Does
that ring a
bell? Yeah, we had a hands-on preview that year, so yes, it was playable.
Yeah, and I want to say that one of the scenes in the demo was you fighting a huge dinosaur. It might have been like a skeletal brontosaurus or something. And I don't even remember if that was in the final game. I played the final game in Japanese, so that one's really hazy. But yeah, I think that's what the demo was. And that was exciting because, you know, Paper Mario was a pretty recent game. It came out in, 2001?
I think it was, February 2001.
Yeah, so to see that on the GameCube, a lot sharper, a lot more vibrant looking. That was really exciting.
And then Pikmin 2.
Yeah.
That was also playable. What do you guys remember about that?
I don't think I played it at all.
I remember I played it a lot that year at E3. I remember at one point sitting on the floor and looking up at the TV to play it because it was probably the last day and my legs were just numb. And I was like, can I sit? Would you be offended if I sat down while I played this? And the guy's like, awesome. Yeah, let's do it. And we're probably playing multiplayer, you know. Yeah, Pikmin 2 was exciting. I thought it was surprising that they would make another one of those.
I think I've literally never played that game ever.
It's really good, but I do prefer the first one. I know there's a lot of debate over that, but it was exciting to see them continue that. It felt like they were taking their new franchises seriously. You know, they showed the Advance Wars game for GameCube that turned into Battalion Wars when it finally came out like a long time later.
Yeah, I think that was like late 05 when that came out.
Yeah, they showed that. I mean, the earliest game they showed, though, was Zelda, Twilight Princess. That game didn't come out for another 2.5 years.
Yeah.
They really had to show us something.
Yeah, but if you look at that video again, it looks a lot like Twilight Princess. Yeah. I mean, it really doesn't look that different. And I know that's a big game, but a lot of it had to do with, you know,
the Wii version, holding
it over for the Wii version. A lot of people think that game was probably finished earlier, but they gave themselves time to make the Wii version, then release both at the same time. But man, that was an interminable wait for that game because they showed it so early and then it got delayed over and over and over. It was really brutal. But in 2004, I mean, you can't even really hear it over the music and in the video that I watched on YouTube, but people were fucking screaming during that trailer.
I think actually the version that I wound up watching had, you could hear the, like, you couldn't hear the music.
Because it was so
people
loud.
Screaming.
Right. It's like, you know, like when deafening. Oprah gives away free stuff on her TV show. But
oh, it really was. It wasn't just like, it wasn't like a hoot. You can hear that at other points, you know, when they announce Wi-Fi for DS. I didn't, this is what a big deal this was. I didn't even know what Wi-Fi was in 2004. I had to, I was like, does that mean internet? I was like asking around, did he really say that? And then even after that, we kind of thought maybe it was a mistake. We thought maybe Nintendo didn't understand what Wi-Fi meant.
Yeah, we really did. We were like, there's no way it really supports Wi-Fi, this fucking brand new technology that's going to change the internet.
Because no one, I mean, the DS is so crazy because in 2004, no one owned a touchscreen. Not a single one in their entire home or family. No one had a touchscreen. No one had Wi-Fi. That's why Nintendo had to sell the damn USB dongle, because people didn't own routers back then, you know? So, like, it was like the only way you could even use Wi-Fi was to go to a Starbucks or something, because this just wasn't something that people had in their homes. I mean, all this stuff seems so futuristic. Like, there's a microphone, and with voice recognition software, you can command your game with your voice. We might laugh at that now as a Kinect thing that Microsoft sells for $150, $200. But this built into your handheld, it just seemed impossible.
It's so forward-thinking when you look at how we play games today. Like, do half of the iOS games we even play exist without the DS laying the touch foreground?
Exactly.
For everything? It's crazy.
This stuff was mind-blowing. And it was...
Yeah, I feel like it's very exemplary in Johnny's impressions of Metroid Prime Hunters.
With people freak out when you see the first video of the DS. They're like, here's Super Mario 64 running on, and we're all kind of like, well, this is just some kind of bullshit tech demo. It looks pretty good. Like, then, there's no way this is real gameplay. And then they smash cut to live gameplay of Metroid Prime Hunters, and you're just like, holy shit, this thing is, like, the PSP was looking like a pretty powerful competitor to the Game Boy until about right now, when it looks like a pile of shit compared to the DS. It's crazy. Too bad that game ended up being a pile of trash.
No, it's not.
What?
It's about a 7.5.
64 DS?
No. Well, 64 DS is about a 7.5.
Metroid Prime Hunters. Hunters.
Hunters is
a good game.
Hunters, that demo that came with the DS was fantastic. I played the shit out of that and then didn't really enjoy the full game.
Yeah.
But Johnny's got some choice quotes here. His abstract here is, ooh, she shoots where you tap the screen. And here's the controls are truly weird, and there's a significant learning curve, but once you get the hang of it, the game is really fun and surprisingly robust. You can double tap the D-pad to jump in that direction. You turn by dragging a stylus across the screen.
Oh, is that how you use a touchscreen?
Dragging a stylus across the screen is in italics,
yeah,
in case you didn't know it was important.
Yeah. Like, that's such a revolutionary idea.
And yes,
like, can you believe
really
this?
Really strange.
Well, and this is when they were pushing, like, they had the strap that had the little thumb pad that you kind of strapped on your thumb, and you could kind of use, they said, oh, you should use this special flat stylus on your thumb when you want to use it like an analog stick.
Yeah.
No game ever really fucking did that.
Yeah, Mario 64 DS, like, I remember trying that once and being like, well, that was kind of dumb.
This is easier with a stylus.
Metroid Prime Hunters, the aiming is manual at all times. Simply tap the screen where you want to shoot, and that's where Samus will shoot. It's like, it's funny with this, because looking back on it now, this, like, it kind of seems ridiculous, but at the time,
it was ridiculous. I mean, that's why they changed it, the final game, to where you shot with a shoulder button, because tapping on the screen to shoot meant that your aim was just a complete mess.
Also, like, meant that you're beating the shit out of the screen, like, constantly. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That was one of the more disconcerting things about playing the DS demos that year, is the device's potential seemed unlimited, but the demos that they had were a lot of hot mess, basically, and a lot of them just had you pounding on the touchscreen. And all of us are thinking, wait, this isn't really fun. I mean, this isn't a good idea to build your game around the concept of you just mashing with a stick on a piece of plastic, you know? And Metroid had more subtlety than that, and I thought it was the most impressive thing I played on DS that year.
I liked the WarioWare demo. I remember playing the WarioWare demo a lot, and I thought WarioWare is the perfect concept for this kind of system. You can do so much crazy shit. And that WarioWare game did do a lot of crazy shit. There were like voice levels and touch levels, and there's basically every tech demo they could possibly dream up for the 3DS. They just, or for the DS, they just crammed it as a mini game into WarioWare.
Yeah, because some of the other demos that were there, we had a Super Mario 64 DS, which was it was only a multiplayer demo. It was called 64 or Super Mario 64 by 4.
Yeah, we weren't even sure that they were going to do a full port of the single player game.
Yeah. There was a WarioWare demo. There was PictoChat.
Oh, PictoChat.
Yeah, which that's when the Wi-Fi compatibility got mentioned, and it kind of seemed, even looking back on it now, it kind of seems like PictoChat would be over Wi-Fi, the way it's kind of like shown in the press.
It was in Clubhouse games if you bought that.
Yeah.
But PictoChat, we had no freaking clue what he was talking about. When it's funny to go back and hear Reggie describe exactly what PictoChat is and exactly why it's amazing, but we didn't understand the language back then, you know, like drawing things and sending them wirelessly to other people.
Drawing a dick.
It seemed like magic.
To your friend.
Drawing a dick.
Right. So cut to a year later in 2005 after the DS has actually come out, and PictoChat is all we do for 4 days at E3. Like, you can't put it down. It's so hilarious.
I miss PictoChat so much.
Oh yeah, I mean, it doesn't.
It wouldn't exist. It doesn't
work outside of a situation like E3. Yeah. You have 12 to 20 people hanging out, and they all have DSs. And PictoChat is just amazing.
There was so much interference at E3 2005 that you could barely get into a PictoChat. I almost said DictoChat.
Well, that's what it's called.
PictoChat chat room. You would try to connect and be like, oh no, I know we said it had 3 spaces left in it, but actually that filled up like immediately.
Okay, I know what you're talking about, but that's because you were at the press conference.
E3. Yeah, it was madness. Yeah.
And that's what you get for even trying at the press conference. Because there's not a greater concentration of Nintendo nerddom in the world and in any time in history than, 2005, 2006 Nintendo.
But, it's a precursor to
Street Pass.
Like, he even mentions, if your DS is asleep and it walks by another DS, it'll send you some kind of message to see if you want to play a game with that person. I don't think that feature ever really came true.
Nope.
Maybe a light blinked or some shit. I don't remember.
I don't believe so.
No. I don't think it did. But that feature did eventually become Street Pass, basically.
Yeah, I mean, it's awesome. Like most Nintendo things where it kind of starts off and then evolves, like how, Mii's basically came out of, what was that, Stage debut? And even, I mean, they've had a lot of games kind of come out of stuff like that. Like Tomodachi Life is something that...
I mean, they're launching like an entire new business in lifestyle because of what, and the precursor to that is the vitality sensor that never came out.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, God.
But, I want to say that the reason that DS, like, wake-up feature didn't ever make it in the system is because there was some kind of minor controversy over people who thought it could be used as like a pedophile radar.
Oh, I bet.
Oh, yeah.
Because only kids play video games.
It's like you can echolocate children at playgrounds. And so Street Pass, if you think about it, the key difference there is that it doesn't tell you when you've passed someone. You just find out later.
Yeah.
That asynchronicity is part of what protects you from other people in Street Pass, because you don't really know who it was until way later, and plus their Mii doesn't really look very much like them anyway.
Yeah.
So you can't really use that to
echolocator for pedophiles. Oh my God.
This stuff was really controversial back then, Mike. I mean, the internet was becoming extremely popular and totally out of hand all of a sudden. And this is a lot of why people thought Nintendo would never do the internet. That's why people flipped out when he mentioned Wi-Fi on the DS.
Yeah. And of course, the last thing I remember that is like, maybe they don't know what Wi-Fi is.
Yeah, this isn't online. This is no line.
No. Jeez. It's beyond online.
Okay. Beyond. Even better. Yeah. I mean, so much of Reggie's delivery at this press conference is difficult to watch now, especially if you watch one of the professional cameras that were there by the news crews or the video websites. And they're way zoomed in on him, and you can really see his eyes shifting around to the teleprompters and his kind of occasionally awkward body movements or stances, or the way he sort of holds the DS out at a kind of a funny angle and then holds it that way for like 5 minutes while he talks about it. It's really distracting.
Yeah, it's really like he's got it like hooked in his hand. It looks weird.
I have to say, like, from the crowd, I was in the crowd, probably relatively close to the front that year, but not like in the front row, but with enough distance in this gigantic room that they were doing the press conference that I didn't really see most of that stuff. For me, we were glued to the video screens. We were listening to Reggie, but we weren't looking at him unless he was like pulling a system out of his pocket, which happens at least twice in this press conference.
Same system too. It's so weird.
Yeah, and Iwata does it like the same way, and then has
like
the same
5 minutes later
break.
Too.
Yeah, Iwata's trying to cheap on. Like he's everyone was happy when Reggie did this. Yeah. I gotta do it now.
He doesn't get quite the same reaction, but there's something like this was Nintendo on the big stage for maybe the first time, and there was a lot of expectation on them this year because of the new competition and because they weren't selling as many GameCubes as they had N64s. And people were really concerned about that because they hadn't sold as many N64s as they had Super Nintendos. And they weren't selling as many. Well, GBA was doing well, but it was starting to slow down. And, you know, Sony was getting into the handheld market for the first time. And a lot of people thought, this is the end for Nintendo. I mean,
they've had the handheld stronghold for so long, but now Sony's coming in. They pretty much weathered the storm of the PSP, though. They were like, oh, here's the DS. They just like dropped their dick on the table, and just Sony had to go start from scratch again, basically.
Yep, and it was, you know, one of the first times where they really – you can tell they're hedging the message so much when they announce the DS. It's got this amazing technology that you can't even wrap your head around that you've never used before in video games. And it's not – doesn't have to be as powerful as that other system to have better games. And it's interesting to see – to hear them kind of balance that message in a very specific way. It's like we're not trying to have the best technical specs. We don't have the best technical specs, but we're going to do way crazier stuff. The developers are gonzo for it, and it's going to be a lot more affordable. And it was. DS launched
all those things. DS was amazing.
It launched at $150. That is so cheap.
Yeah.
It's hard to believe when you go back and think about what you pay now for a Vita, you know, $300 Vita or a $500 iPad. $150 DS.
Even a
3DS. And it was cutting edge technology.
A 3DS 3 years after launch is, I guess, not even – well, the 2DS I think is $130. They kind of phased out the original one, but I think that was hovering around $150.
Mm-hmm.
They still do the original one, but they usually bundle it with a game now. And then the XL is like
actually, I've heard some stuff that the original model of the 3DS is gone. Kind of being phased out completely.
Huh. Interesting.
The amazing thing is if you look at a 3DS, especially, well, either one, either the original or the XL, like from 10 feet away, you almost can't even tell the difference between that and what Reggie pulls out of his pocket in 2004.
Yeah.
Like 10 years, and that system really... Like on a grand, a lot of little details have changed, but on a grand scale, the form factor and what that system represents and what it does really hasn't changed.
If anything, the most drastic, the piece of hardware that's the most distant from the one he pulls out of his pocket is actually the first DS with the weird angled edges, because the prototype he pulls out is very sleek and very rounded, and we all ended up thinking it wasn't good looking at the time. But it looks closer to what an XL looks like today than what the DS Fat looks like.
Yeah, kind of. And the weird thing was that how Reggie kind of called this the developer system as well, saying that's what the DS stood for.
That's a marketing thing, though, to appeal to the developers.
Yeah, and then they had a bunch of developers that, I mean, going over this list, most of those people don't really develop games on Nintendo systems anymore. I mean, Vivendi doesn't exist anymore.
I noticed a lot of the people in the videos, though, a lot of the people, all the quote-unquote developers in the videos were actually, like, VPs and heads of studios. They weren't the actual people developing the games.
Yep,
it was the marketing people who were just playing up their relationship with Nintendo and saying nice things because you're playing nice with your partners.
Yeah.
They had very few actual developers.
A lot of those videos, for the most part, at least in this era, were like that, though, and even extending to, like, my first couple E3s, like, when they had the 3DS stuff. But, like, I mean, some of the companies that were here, you got Activision, Namco, Vivendi, Square Enix, Majesco, Atari, Konami, THQ, Sega, the Pokemon Company was a part of this, this developers talking about it.
Basically EA, Nintendo.
Yeah, EA, Capcom, and Ubisoft.
At least half of those aren't around anymore, right?
Yeah.
Majesco was in there, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's pretty crazy. I mean, they really were touting the third-party stuff. And at the time, in 2004, I would say third-party support for GameCube was still pretty good. 2005, yeah. Not so much.
Yeah, 2005 is when the GameCube just dropped off a cliff.
It did, yeah, which was that was the really scary thing, because 2004, it seemed like it might have 5 years ahead of it. I mean, Nintendo announced so many games for GameCube this E3. When you go back and watch the press conference video, you have to realize that almost all of those were being shown for the first time ever.
They were
completely brand new games. We like a dozen GameCube games, almost all of them first party or second party. And we didn't, I mean, some of them we'd never even heard of before. We had no idea what is Odama? What is Donkey Kong Jungle Beat?
Biting Kaitos?
We played Geist a couple years
in a row, though. Geist, Biting Kaitos. And then we had all these sequels to things that like we didn't know we would ever get sequels to, like Metroid Prime.
Pikmin 2.
Yeah, I couldn't believe that they were making another one of those. And if Nintendo came out and announced 12 new Wii U titles this year that no one had ever heard of, they would win three E3s all.
No one announces that many games anymore.
Yeah.
No one can do that anymore. Back then, you could develop games with such smaller teams, and Nintendo was still a humongous company. I think they were the largest game developer in the world back then. And so they could just make an incredible number of games simultaneously. And unfortunately, that's not realistic anymore. It's the way things are. I would love if they, divided a bunch of their people up into like little tiny indie studios and they just released, 20 games a year just from, just with much smaller teams. That'd be exciting to me.
But that would be super exciting. I guess just kind of wrapping up the DS tech demos that were there. You did have I think it was called the Balloon Trip tech demo, which basically turned into Yoshi Touch and Go.
Oh, yeah.
And the other kind of notable one was Steel Diver.
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys remember Steel Diver?
I sure don't. I remember thinking it sucked.
Because how was that different from what kind of became of that?
It was almost identical.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That was don't you remember, Neil, when they brought back Steel Diver on 3DS at E3, and yet again, it seemed like kind of a tech demo and not even a real game. And we're all playing this thinking, this is kind of the same as it was like 8 years ago. Like, did they even change it? They put it in 3D, but that's about it. It feels exactly the same. It was really, really creepy playing that 3DS demo because it was like, man, the deja vu.
Deja vu that you never expected would happen.
Right. I'm glad they've salvaged Steel Diver into something interesting with Subwars.
Yeah, Subwars is pretty cool. There was actually a recent update that added the Blue Marine from Star Fox 64. Which is kind of, I'm actually going to play more of that game now.
I might boot it up for the first time.
Yeah. I played the two single-player missions and played one online match and then never touched again, but I might go back to it now.
And it all started in 2004.
Yep. With Steel Diver.
Friggin' Steel Diver.
So, Iwata came out and then talked about the Revolution.
Yes, he did.
Yeah, and talked about how that was going to kind of change things and they were going to go in a bold new direction.
So he is just speaking straight truth, and we're all just like, what the fuck is he even talking about?
And everything's just like, yeah, they knew what they were doing.
He did literally exactly what he said he would do in this press conference. He did every single thing precisely as he said he would. It's amazing to see him just lay it all out, and then we're all like, what's the big mystery Nintendo's got? And he just told us all right up there.
It's really the opposite of like Microsoft last year at E3. When they lay all this stuff out there and then immediately reverse every single decision that they had announced.
Yeah, because people
The cohesion of vision at Nintendo in 2004. Iwata, I think, had been on the job for 1 year. And
yeah, I think the early 2003 was when he became president.
Yeah, and it was announced like the day before E3 in 2003.
Okay. Because E3 was back in May.
Yeah, in May. And then he showed up the next day, and we're like, oh my God, the president of Nintendo is here. I don't mean at E3. I mean, he's in America for the first time in history. It was mind-boggling, But by that time, Iwata had been in the job for a year and seemed like he was exerting an incredible influence. Like putting someone like Reggie in a high up position at Nintendo and having him talk the way he was and like really aggressively going after the haters, the doubters, courting the loyal fans and calling bullshit on all the sales doom and gloom that people were putting over them, and being, I felt really aggressive, not only in tone, not just in like a totally radical, you know, cheesy kind of a way, but like I feel like the decisions they're making at this time, the things they're announcing, the way that they're going at their business is incredibly aggressive at E3 2004. And a lot of it did work out for them, I'll say. GameCube, not so much. I think they had their heart in the right place with GameCube, and there's probably a book to be written about what went wrong there in the next year or two. But maybe you could also argue that these guys came in so late in the game for GameCube that it was already too late for them to turn the ship around. And it was going to do what it was going to do after 3 years on the market. But they were setting out for DS and Wii, or the Revolution. And, you know, it really was like an incredible new era in Nintendo. And we were, Mike, I'm sure you'll be with me. Like, we all were psyched. We were, like, so excited.
Especially after 2003, when we were just like, this is kind of a mediocre E3 showing. And then a year later, it's just like, boom, they're, like, they're back. They're all strong, and, like, they're really confident looking in the presser, and they've got all these cool new games, and then they do all this cool stuff. They've got, like, Wi-Fi. They've got this new handheld that ensures their complete dominance of the handheld market for the foreseeable future. And then at the very end, they're like, fucking Zelda, you guys.
Everyone just explodes. I am not Link, but I do know him.
Yeah, and then Miyamoto comes out and he waves the sword, and we're all just like, yeah.
And like the timing's off on the
You can tell it's a guy who's hitting a button, so he's a little late.
You can actually, this just shows how amazing Miyamoto is on stage. They try it the first time and it doesn't work. And then Miyamoto, like, looks directly in the camera, gets the guy's attention, like gives him a little physical cue that says, we're going to do that again, okay? And he's smiling the whole time. And then he does it again, and it's perfect the second time. And then he walks off stage. That was all unscripted. Amazing.
Yeah. I mean, I just remember watching that trailer over and over again, and basically watching that press conference, that bit of it, over and over again with the ridiculous Miyamoto coming out to... Just, I mean, really, really.
He doesn't even do anything. He's just like, hey, I'm Miyamoto. Here's the fan service.
He literally just says, I am not Link, but I do know him, and like walks off stage.
No, there's a little more to it than that. But
he says, like, but well, his English was not anywhere near good at the time. So,
yeah.
And he didn't have Bill there to translate. So he's just, you know, they just put him out there, say two things, give the fanboys what they want, and then get off stage. Don't worry. You don't have to do anything else.
Well, Bill was actually pretty new to the company. This was the first year I met Bill, and it was probably
at the
Nintendo corporate party.
Hadn't he been at the treehouse for a while?
Bill was there for at least, I think he was at the reveal of Pikmin translating for Miyamoto. I remember.
He must have been kind of moving into a new role at this time, though.
Yeah.
Okay. So I had not really met him before this year, and it was that year we were at the... I don't remember the name of this place.
Back when they had parties.
It actually might have been the House of Blues still, because they did it like 3 years in a row at the Hollywood House of Blues. And we went to the party, and there were three or four of us in our group. And the Black Eyed Peas were playing, and I thought they were horrible. I thought they were the worst band I'd ever seen. And that's the only time I've ever seen them perform. I thought they were friggin' incredibly bad. And so I was like, I got to get away from it. Like, the music was so bad, I didn't want to be at the party anymore. And I was talking with, I don't remember who it was. And I was probably there with Billy and a few other people I knew. And we were just kind of hanging out. And one of them's like, hey, there's a room upstairs we can go to that's a lot quieter. And we went up there. It was like right above the entrance. At first I thought we were leaving the party, but there was like a little stairway nearby. And we went up the stairs into this like private area where they had all their E3 demos set up the day before the show opened. So I spent the next 3 hours standing in this room saying, fuck the party and the band downstairs. I'm hanging out up here. And I was in this demo room at the party for the rest of the night, and I played every single game. And as soon as I got home that night, I went back to the hotel, and everybody got together, and we had like a 3 hour long Q&A with everybody about all the games that I had played. It was exhausting.
Yeah, I remember that. I was awake for that. I didn't get to go to the party because I was not of age at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then also we only got like what, a couple tickets, and obviously
They were very, very hard to get into, like a real pain in the ass to
get. It's okay. Neil sent me to Disneyland, so all
we're even now.
But I remember that was the year, it was up in that demo room above the party where I really got to meet Bill for the first time. So I've known him for 10 years. And we got to talking, we were having drinks, and he was like basically giving me a live demo of Donkey Kong Jungle Beat and some of the other games too, but that was his favorite. He's like, this is my favorite game at E3 this year. I was like, well, I want to play that. He's like, it's being made by these new guys in Tokyo. And I was like, oh yeah, I remember hearing about that studio. So he walked me through the whole thing and showed me how to, you know, punch the boss at the end of the level and everything. And I thought it was amazing. I thought it was so, so cool. So after that, I went back and briefed everyone on all the games, and that was actually really helpful for the next day to organize all the impressions that we wanted to write and like figure out what people should do what and how many people should we get on these various different demos. And it was useful because back then we used to carry about 18 or 20 people deep at E3. So it was a big job just trying to get everybody organized.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the tough thing. I mean, it's probably similar then, although I guess the press conference was the day before, so you kind of had a little more knowledge about what might be there.
Right. We would spend the entire evening like trying to map it all out because we knew what games they were going to have there, but you didn't get to play them until the next day. So like trying to sleep that night was painful.
Yeah.
We'd get a B-roll DVD from the press people on the way out of the press conference.
And just watch that over and over again?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We would dissect the
shit out of the B-rolls.
Yeah. We would hook it up and we would just like go through it slow motion. Like, oh, rewind. We got to watch that again. We're all like
a Mario Kart 8, Mario Kart TV.
Yep. We were all like commenting on it and furiously taking notes, and we're writing previews all day long. And it was just this like – just this hours and hours and hours and hours of like writing coverage and getting hyped up to play the games the next day, and everybody's freaking out. And it was just an amazing like whirlwind. It was, you know, really a very magical time to be on our website staff in that big, big group and going to E3 and playing this stuff. It was so exciting.
I mean, that's kind of, I guess, to kind of bring it home to where we are at just less than a week away from E3 2014. That's the feeling that I want to feel like Tuesday.
I'd love that.
June 10th.
Yeah.
Like that's what I kind of hope for, because honestly, like the past 2 years, while they've been fun, there have been good demos, but not as exciting as some of the past E3s that even I've been to and the ones from, you know, 10 years ago.
What if we get a new Metroid game? How happy will I be?
What if they actually make a big deal out of it and like make it sound like they're excited for it?
Yeah, they let Metroid's, 25th anniversary? It's same year as Zelda. They just let it slip the fuck by.
Yeah. I mean, who knows what the future will hold with E3 2014? But I guess any final thoughts on 2004 before we kind of put it to bed until, I guess, maybe 2024, when we can talk about the E3 that happened 20 years ago?
I would really strongly recommend that people go to YouTube and watch the press conference. There's a lot of years that I would not recommend that for, but 2004,
like 2003. Yeah.
2004 is just probably the best press conference they've ever done. And it is truly, truly exciting. And I got to say, there is something more exciting about watching these people up on stage do it than in a video. I don't know exactly what it is. I mean, part of it for me is it's also my nostalgia for being in that room. And there is like an electricity in the air with these thousands of people gathered to see what mysteries Nintendo is about to unveil. I mean, I don't know that, you know, I've ever been more excited in my life as like when I'm about to go skydiving and when I'm about to get to see the Nintendo press conference in person.
Yeah. Because I mean, that's
you can taste it in the air. Everybody's freaking out because the anticipation is so tense and you're so, so, so close to getting to see and play all of this stuff.
It's the weird thing, because going to E3 this year, this is the first year that I've ever gone that we're not going to any press conferences. There's no reason.
They don't do them anymore.
Well, I mean, Nintendo doesn't, but I mean, Microsoft and Sony, I guess if we really wanted to, we could probably get passes for those and see them.
We've never really bothered. I mean, honestly, I don't have enough emotionally invested in those to want to be there in person. I'm happy to watch it. With a box of pizza and
sodas. Yeah, and sitting on the hotel room floor. That's what we'll do is we'll probably hole up in the hotel or maybe in the E3 press lounge and just watch the press conferences that way.
And that's fine.
And with EA and Ubisoft, once again, we could probably get invited to those or get into them, but there's not really much point for us to go. It's almost like it's worth just watching them online and hanging out in LA nearby.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it's still, I mean, there's something about being at a video game press conference that is pretty cool, and the Nintendo one's especially cool. And I miss that.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
But we're going to have a good time this year, guys. And,
yep.
Have fun without me. I'll be on the home team.
Well, the home team can still be pretty exciting, I think.
Yeah. Home team, I mean, you know, we all watch the same internet streaming video now, so the playing field is even.
The only difference is that we go on the show floor. You guys, like, the press conference experience is almost identical. Probably better for you guys, actually.
Yeah, better bandwidth, so.
Yeah.
That's not why we go. We don't go to watch a video. We go to play the game.
Yep.
So
yep.
We have to focus on that. But I mean, I always get excited for E3 about 1 week out, which is where we're at now. Watching this video really crystallized my anxiety about E3 this year and my enthusiasm for it. And it really, like, it makes me feel younger. Like, it, you know, especially watching this video from 10 years ago, makes me feel 10 years younger. It makes me so excited for Nintendo and to see what they're going to do. And, you know, it's unlikely that they're going to reach the heights of 2004, but it's possible. I mean, there's always that potential. And because we don't know, that's why I keep going back. Like, if I knew it was going to be crap, I wouldn't go. But I guess that shows just how much of an optimist I am. I keep going back every damn year. Even though I get burned a lot of times by Nintendo's press conference, especially, or by their big round of announcements, but I'm always, there's just that pregnant anticipation that maybe something amazing is going to happen because I know that it can. I know that it has in the past.
It could.
Yeah. I'm ready.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fuck it. All right, Johnny, let's go to LA right now.
Let's do it.
Thanks for listening, everybody. See you next week.
Bye. Happy E3.
Bye-bye.
On today's segment of Connectivity, the two Zachs are uniting together to talk about game collecting.
Yes.
It's me, Zach Kaplan, and industry luminary, Zachary Miller.
Yeah. get it, get it.
Yeah, that's what industry luminaries always say.
Yep.
Yep. So we're talking about game collecting and probably some other collecting stuff because Zach has some secrets. Well, they're not really secret, but yeah. So, Zach, starting off with you, even though there's only two people, so I guess that makes sense. What game stuff do you collect?
Well, I used to collect a lot. I used to collect physical copies of games for Super Nintendo, N64, and GameCube for a while. I'd usually buy them secondhand at you know, GameStop or Bosco's, the comic shop, because I'd get them cheaper, obviously. But for whatever reason, I just kind of wanted to have copies of games in case I wanted to play them someday, right?
Yeah, I'm the same way. I've been buying games for a while. I've been kind of against buying a game digitally if I can get it in a box.
Yeah, I was that way for a very long time.
I mean, my opinion's starting to change because I'm, like, realizing that there's no point to the box anymore. It's literally just a disc that, at least on, like, PS4 games, it installs right onto the system, and it's just a key to unlock the game.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Well, I mean, I don't know if it's a key to unlock the game because it still needs the disc, but, like, Killzone is a 50-gig install from the disc.
Oh, good lord.
So, I mean, and it's the same size as if you didn't get the disc.
Mm.
Yeah, so.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Unless I'm completely messing it up. But I'm pretty sure that's the case.
Huh. That's cool.
Speaking of the PS4, well, I'm just going to go on a tangent.
Do it.
If I can. Collector's editions. What are your thoughts? Well, my thoughts are they're cool, but they're really stupid.
Yup, that's basically mine, and yet I used to get them all the time. In fact, my most recent collector's edition was the Dead or Alive 5 collector's edition, which I've written about for the site. It was kind of worthless, although it did come with some, you know, bikinis that were timed exclusives.
Oh.
I think my favorite collector's edition was the Dead Space 2 one, which came with a miniature plasma cutter.
That's
which lit cool. up like a flashlight. It's kind of cool.
Was this Dead Space 2 or 3?
2.
All right, good.
Yeah, screw 3.
This 3, it'd just be a microtransaction.
Yeah, it would. Probably was.
Actually, I think the only collector's edition I own is the Old Republic, which I bought like a year later for $50 because it was originally $200.
It's just damn! Like,
yeah, it comes with a Darth Malgus statue, the game soundtrack, a book, and a nice box.
Nice.
And the game, some in-game items.
You know, there's quite a few collector's editions that come with, like, statues or figures of the characters from the game. Like, there was one with Lara Croft for the new Tomb Raider. And there was one with Nathan Drake for Uncharted 3. But they actually never, when you look at them, they never even look that good.
Yeah, no, the Darth Malgus was made by Gentle Giant, which does, like, a bunch of other Star Wars statues.
Yeah, they did some Hellboy figures for Hellboy DVDs back in the day.
Yeah, so it's decent quality. It's good, in my opinion. At least I think it looks nice.
One of our readers, I'm forgetting who, sent me the little statue. It's not little, I guess. The statue that came with Injustice. Of Wonder Woman smashing Batman over the head with, like, Superman's baby ship. And it looks it looks really cool from a distance, but when you, like, get up close, it looks really kind of bad. Like, Wonder Woman looks like a man. And she looks like a man in the game, but, you know, for the statue, make her look like a woman.
Yeah. So, collector's editions, I've seen some really dumb ones recently. Splinter Cell Blacklist, of course they didn't come to the Wii U because the collector's editions, which I wrote a whole thing about it on my own little blog one time. And, well, Splinter Cell Blacklist, you got an actual drone.
Ah!
Well, it was kind of like a drone. Well, at least I thought it was a drone. It's like a radio-controlled helicopter, and it looks like a drone.
Oh, like the one they sell in malls.
Well, it's not a helicopter, though. It's like, I don't know how to explain it.
But yeah, it flies around and it's radio controlled.
Yeah, and I think there's a camera attached to it.
Oh, wow.
I'm pretty sure.
That's kind of hardcore.
Yeah. It was like $200.
It's like when they came out with one of the Call of Duty games, maybe it was the Vietnam one, where it came with night vision goggles. And I've heard they're actually kind of functional.
And wasn't there a Halo game that came with a Master Chief helmet, but it would only fit on, like, a cat?
Yep, so. Cat helmet.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I've actually always wanted that, just to have it.
Do you have a cat?
I do have a cat.
Would you put it on your cat?
I probably would put it on the cat.
Yeah. I'd be worried the cat would suffocate.
The cat would probably try to kill me.
Yeah. So there's a lot. I mean, collector's editions are like the newest thing in game collecting. Well, they're not really new, but...
But they're getting ridiculous.
Yeah, they're much more prominent. Every big game and its mother and its dog and its dog's walker.
Like Watch Dogs has like a total of 15 different collector's editions through North America and Europe, right? And yeah, some of them don't even have the game?
It's five.
Just five.
Yeah, but that's still a lot. Jim Sterling, he did a thing, his videos. He was talking about how if you wanted to get every part of the in-game stuff, like, you would have to buy multiple editions. There's no way to just buy one version and get all the in-game items. You have to pre-order it from certain places, too.
See, that kind of crap bugs me, because all that DLC is going to be timed, and it's eventually just going to come out. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. And all it does, back to collecting, my physical copy of Assassin's Creed 4 on PS4 has a Target Edition written on it. And my copy of Splinter Cell Blacklist has Wii U. Splinter Cell Blacklist on the Wii U has GameStop Edition written on it.
What's special about them? Anything?
It came from GameStop.
I have the Best Buy edition of Let's Tap, and it came with like a Kleenex box that you could obviously put your controller on and tap along. That was seriously the prize. Like, that's why you'd buy it from Best Buy. I got it for $5. And I was like, free Kleenex box, yo!
I mean, the obvious joke would be, wouldn't that go well with Dead or Alive?
Ew, it would.
That's just stereotyping. We don't do that here on Connectivity.
No, we're classy people.
We're classy. We are very classy. And civilized. Very civilized. So, collecting. Well, we collect new games, but a lot of retro games, too, like you said, on the SNES, GameCube. Like, isn't it weird saying GameCube is retro?
Yeah, it kind of is.
Yeah. I remember when GameCube wasn't retro.
I know. I remember standing in line to get it.
I remember seeing commercials for it and not having it.
Such a good little system.
Yeah. Well, I got one recently, actually, back to the collecting. I'm just going to keep saying that. Back to collecting. I got a GameCube recently, or within the past year, and it was my first one. And it's pretty cool owning, you know, an actual system to play old games on rather than just downloading them on Virtual Console. I mean, at this point, there's no GameCube Virtual Console games.
I would hope there is someday, though.
Yeah, especially since they're releasing the GameCube adapter for the Wii U.
Yeah!
Yeah. No, but, like, I got Super Mario Sunshine, Wave Race, Blue Storm.
That's a good game.
Yeah. I just got Spider-Man 2. For like $1 at GameStop, but nice. it didn't have the case though, which bothers the crap out of me.
Oh yeah,
but that's back to collecting.
Yeah,
cases. I am obsessed with having the cases. Like, I just can't. It doesn't look right if I don't have a case.
Yeah, that's. I mean, I'm the same way. When I bought Metroid Prime 2, three different times. First, when it was new and it had a case. And then, you know, years later, I decided I didn't like it and I sold it. And I bought it again when Metroid Prime 3 was announced, just so I could get back into the series. And I got it from GameStop for like $20 and it didn't have a case. And I was like, yeah. What? What? And then I bought, the Metroid Prime trilogy. So I have a sickness.
Yeah. The sad thing is, like, at GameStop, a lot of the games, especially they do this or did this with DS games, is they throw away the cases.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, there's just too many of them. Like, how many copies of Pony Time Barbie Adventure can they have?
Yeah, exactly. Eventually you have to start filling space with actual boxes of actual games and not whatever that is.
Yeah, I don't know if that exists. I'm just guessing.
There's several Barbie Horse Adventures games. I feel like, though, they should, like, even if they're not going to keep the game case out in the main store, they should at least keep it in the back. And, you know, when people buy Metroid Prime 2, they'll be like, let me go get you the box. I understand they have to save shelf space, but, you know, give me a friggin' box.
Yeah, GameStop I went to, I was with my friend and she bought the Pokemon Mystery Dungeon, I think, on 3DS. And so they're like, we don't have a case for you, but we'll do you one better. And then they give her, like, this cheap GameStop case.
Oh, God.
I'm pretty sure that's what they said. They're like, this is about as good.
Yeah, sure. For that. I've actually bought, what am I trying to say? I have just bought empty cases from them in the past so that I can make Game Boy Advance cartridge cases.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, it's really fun.
See, like, I've gone in games, I've toyed with the idea of getting a game without the case and then printing out the cover.
Right, I do
that.
But
unless,
you need access to a nice printer, though.
Yeah, like, if I just printed it out with computer paper, it would look like shit.
Yeah. No, that's exactly right. I had to, what I would do is I would download all the covers from the cover project that I liked, put them on, like, a flash drive, and take them to Kinko's or something.
Yeah. On the case that we're talking about of not having cases,
right,
I just want to give a big fuck you to Nintendo in 2006 for not giving Wii Sports a case.
I know, right?
Like, why do you... Who wants it in a fucking sleeve?
I know. I ended up taking one of the, like, double CD folder things. You know, there's one... You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
It goes in the middle of the spine. And putting Wii Sports on that, and then putting that whole thing in Wii Sports Resort, so that they were both in the same case. But the Wii Sports Resort booklet is, like, friggin' huge. So it all just kind of squashed together. It really bugged me.
Well, when I got the Wii, I didn't get it till later on when they bundled it with both Wii Sports and Wii Sports Resort.
Oh.
And both of them didn't have cases. Why? It was frustrating. And they still came with a full manual. Well, Wii Sports Resort came with a full manual that didn't fit in the case.
Why in God's name?
I don't know.
Would you put Wii Sports in the box when you already have Wii Sports Resort?
Well, Wii Sports... Wait, what's your question? I'm confused.
Why would they give you both? The good the Wii Sports Resort is clearly superior.
To give it good value, I guess.
I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, that shit should just be installed on the system.
Yeah. It should be like Face Raiders.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, kids, do you remember Face Raiders?
Dude, Face Raiders got me through a friggin' hospital stay. It was amazing.
Yeah, 3DS is like the universal system to take when you go to a hospital.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. And that's how I get sick of... That's how I got sick of, like, a couple of my games this year. Mario Kart 7... Link Between Worlds. I'm like, I'm done with them. I played them in a hospital. I don't want to play them again. And that's why I play my Vita more.
My first first 3DS game, in fact, was Dead or Alive for review. And what was I going to say? Oh, and I played it in the hospital.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There's great places you can play games nowadays.
Yeah.
Like, you can play them in the dentist's office.
Yeah, that's true. And I do.
Yeah. Yeah, doctor's office.
Yep.
The person who... Subway?
You know, a little known fact about portable games, you can actually take your, like, old Game Boy Advance and Game Boy Color along with you, too. They'll also work in a portable setting.
I know, that's so weird,
though. A lot of people
don't
know that.
Yeah.
They're just like, no, only 3DS or Vita. I'm like, no, son. You got old games, use them.
Nobody says Vita except me.
I like my Vita. I got Monsters, I got Monster Mo, whatever it's called, dude.
Monster, and what are you talking
about?
That
card game, surely you've seen this. It's a card game where all the cards, I feel bad getting it. I should first.
Was it free?
Yeah, it was a review code. I just asked for it, and I said, I don't know if I can actually review this, but I'll write a blog post about it maybe. He's like, cool,
here's a code. Did it just come out?
Yeah, it did.
Is it cross-buy with PS4?
No, it's just a Vita game.
I'll figure it out.
Yeah, but it's kind of a dirty game, and I didn't realize how dirty it was until people started posting about it. Siren started posting about it on Twitter after I'd gotten the review code, and I was like, maybe I don't want to play this shit.
Yeah, that can happen with games. Even back in the old days.
Yeah.
Back before I was born, there were Atari porn games.
Mm-hmm.
I learned all this from Angry Video Game Nerd. There was 3DO porn. Well, it wasn't really a
on 3DO, I don't think anything could be.
Plumbers don't wear ties. You ever heard of that?
I
only
have not.
Reason I know it is because of Angry Video Game Nerd. Just search it, and it's pretty funny.
I will.
Anyways, back to collecting.
So what do you collect specifically?
I collect games. I mean, that's mainly what I collect. I have the games. But outside of gaming, I have a Star Wars collection.
Right.
I have a comic book collection. I have a Star Wars comic book collection.
Any particular comics outside of Star Wars?
Well, see, I've just been, like, buying new comics and I read them, and I... Mostly Marvel.
Yeah.
I haven't gone back to, like, buy expensive old, like, back issues.
Right.
It's mainly just, like... Oh, I got a new issue that came out in 2014, but maybe I should wrap it up just in case.
Yeah. No, that's a good policy.
Oh, and Lego. Lego stuff.
Oh, nice. Man, I used to collect Lego all the friggin' time, but it's so friggin' expensive now.
Yeah, it really is.
There's they released this back when I was a teenager, when the original trilogy came out again when they re-released it in theaters. Lego came out with an X-Wing. And it was a re-release of the original X-Wing from, you know, who knows when. And I didn't buy it because it costs like $80.
Nothing compared to today.
Today, yeah. So now, today, recently, not recently, maybe within the last few years, they came out with kind of an updated X-Wing with new, you know, newer pieces. And that's like $70 when it's on sale. I really want that thing, but it's stupid expensive.
The Ultimate, I'm pretty sure that's the Ultimate Collector Series X-Wing.
Yeah.
It's $200.
Oh, good lord.
The most expensive Lego Star Wars set, at least that I can think of, is the Death Star.
Did they release that to the public? I saw pictures of it.
It's and it comes with all the minifigures, and you open it up and stuff.
Oh, damn.
But, well, it's all open, so you see all the little scenes that took place on the Death Star.
Yeah.
Death Star. And that's $400.
Oh, good lord. Is it enormous, though?
It's pretty big.
I think I saw maybe Ultimate Collector's Edition 2 of the Millennium Falcon. And it looked like it would take up your whole table. It looked huge.
Yeah. That's the problem with Lego, is it takes up a lot of space.
True.
And it's very hard to dust.
Oh, yeah, I know that for sure. You got to dunk that stuff in water and
let
it dry.
Especially, but it sucks when they cheap out and they use stickers instead of
and the stickers
printing.
Just peel right off.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I remember back in my day, they used to print on Lego.
Yeah, no.
It was pretty awesome.
I have some older sets with printing. A lot of McDonald's ones for some reason.
Really?
I don't know. They made a McDonald's set at one point.
Huh.
Yeah.
Kind of cool.
Kind of weird. So, I think it's been around 20 minutes of two Zachs talking and just enthralling. Is that even a word?
I think so.
And our audience, their IQ has gone up.
It must have.
Their health points have increased.
And I haven't even talked about my, certain kind of collecting. If we want their IQ points to drop.
No.
No?
No.
No.
I mean, well, if you want to talk about it, we can.
Well, I collect video game stuff, right?
Yeah.
I just last year I got a Virtual Boy.
Oh, that'll hurt your eyes.
In box, by the way.
That's pretty awesome.
You know, the weirdest thing about the Virtual Boy, though, like, the screen is a centimeter away from your eyes, and I'm nearsighted, so I should be able to see it real clear, but I need my glasses to see it. Otherwise, it is totally blurry. I don't know why. It bothers me. But if I have my glasses on, I can actually play it for a pretty long time.
I'm not sure if I told you or if I said it on a podcast, but I remember telling some people from NWR, my deep, dark secret, that when I was little and I had a Game Boy Advance SP, I would put it directly like on my eyes so the game would be full screen.
Nice. Yeah, I heard that story.
I remember doing that. That's terrible.
You're going to like the Oculus Rift then, because that's basically what it is.
Well, screw that. That's Facebook. I'll get the project.
Oh, the Morpheus, yeah. I those should both be at E3, I would think. I'd like to see what they have there.
And do you know what's not going to be at E3? Third-party games on Wii U.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. Except maybe Watch Dogs.
Oh, God. I've been, I made some off-the-wall E3 predictions. I won't go into them here, but one of them was... It ties into my other collection. I predicted that Super Sonico will be announced in Smash Brothers. And Super Sonico is a figure. I own about 5 Sonicos. Maybe 6? I collect early figures from Japan.
I think I've heard of Super Sonico. Wasn't there a figure released on the same day as the 3DS?
I wouldn't be surprised.
As I remember seeing pictures that there was longer lines in Japan for this figure than there were for the 3DS.
Well, that would be sad. She has pink hair, and she's always wearing headphones, big headphones, and she's...
Oh, is she a Vocaloid?
No, God, no. Oh, you might be talking about Miku. Stupid. Oh. Hatsune Miku!
Oh.
That's a Vita game, right? Don't you have that?
I don't have it, but yeah, that does exist.
People love that friggin' game.
People have paid money for that.
Yeah. It sounds like it's just like Amplitude or something.
Yeah.
I don't know, but I own probably 50 figures of various sizes, scales.
Yeah.
I'm very proud of them. They're my girls. Dude, funny story. Might have already heard this.
Well, so let our listeners hear.
Well, let our listeners hear. So I go to PAX East, right? I'm the first one in our hotel. Alex is next. And I forget how we get on the topic, But he's always thought that when I was talking about my girls on the show, I was talking about my daughters. I said to him, dude, I don't have kids. He's like, what are you talking about? Let me show you. I pulled up my figure collection on my iTouch. He's like, oh, that's different.
Yeah, well.
It really is, buddy.
But how did he, I don't know how he could have thought that.
Well, I guess I never explicitly said my busty PVC plastic girls.
with removable underwear on some of them.
Some of them have removable tops, yep. You know, when I started collecting these things, my intent was only to collect gaming girls. And yeah, I started out with Kasumi from Dead or Alive, and then I got Velvet from Odin Sphere. And it kind of just eventually blossomed into other areas, but you know, that was the intent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, before we go, what's the, maybe, your game collection, do you know how many games you have?
No, I've been downsizing in the last few years, because like you say, you know, these boxes take up a lot of room. And I'm always wary, like, I don't want to be in a situation where I have to move, and I'm not saying I'm going to move soon, but if that should ever happen, and I don't want to take up several boxes of just game stuff.
Yeah. So for me, I tell this to a lot of people because it's true. My 3DS collection, at least, I used to have 50 games.
So every 3DS game?
Yeah, at one point I did. And, like, that was my gamer, my Nintendo cred.
Nice.
So I'd go around and say, yeah, I have 50 games. And the Power Glove, and it's so bad.
You have a Power Glove?
No, I don't.
Oh. But,
just referencing the wizard.
That's something I've always wanted just to have. I know it's shit, but I've always just wanted it.
Well, maybe you can ask that Isaiah to borrow his. Isaiah Triforce Johnson.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ooh. Maybe he'll lend it to you. He seems like a nice guy.
Yeah, I'd also need a working NES.
Yeah, that's true, too. So, I think we've talked about a lot of great things. I think when two Zacks come together and they just Zack off with each other, great things happen.
Yep, I agree.
On that note, I'm Zach Kaplan, and
I'm Zach Miller.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. Don't forget you can send your listener mail to connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com. Now that E3 has passed, it's the perfect time. Send us your questions and comments, etc. We'd love to answer them on the show. And if you've got a moment, please rate and review the show on iTunes. Thanks.